Good morning, church. It's a long time since I last preached. I generally avoid preaching like the plague because the reason I avoid preaching is I spend time in the text and I actually have to engage and apply it, and this is no different, and I find that process excruciating, and I hope later on you will too, because that's the point of preaching, is to bring you to a point of asking yourself some significant questions. So we'll get there, but we'll get there the long way and the nice way. Last time I spoke with church, I talked about a particular devotional practice, the devotional practice of slow reading. No, that's the other direction, that's the right direction, and there we go. Cool. Slow reading. I talked about how I'd work my way through like a book of the Bible, like Mark, and I would read a section at a time and think through that and then move on to the next one the following day and just process that deeply. I want to talk to you about another devotional practice, and that is reading lay theologians. I mean, if that's the short reading, this is the long reading version of that. Back probably about 25 years ago, I was lecturing at Robert Menzies School of Christian Studies. I was lecturing in Christian education. I've got a major in that area, and it's not a common one. And I was teaching undergraduates in that particular area for the Diploma of Theology. One of the other lecturers got ill, got very ill, and ended up being a terminal illness. That was George Fisher, and he used to be the editor of Southern Cross magazine. Anyway, George's subject that he was responsible for was lay theologians. And this is where I got acquainted and engaged at a deeper level with this area. They thought because I had an undergraduate in literature, I'd be the appropriate person to teach that. So I took on his class. And I came across these wonderful long-form theological essays that we wouldn't normally necessarily think of in that way. So Tolstoy's War and Peace, there's whole chapters that are straight theological textbook. They're just dry, straight chapters. And they're about the sovereignty of God. A good Presbyterian book, other than Calvin's Institute of Religions, is War and Peace. And it's supported by the narrative. The narrative tells exactly the same story that you're reading in the theological pieces that you're reading. That God is in control, humans seem to make decisions, but they're basically irrelevant because God's purpose still works to be achieved. Daniel Defoe, you might know him from Robinson Crusoe. He wrote a book called The Journal of a Plague Year. And when I first came across that, I was in college, and this was in the early 90s, and I was reading Philip Yancey's book, I Was Just Wondering. And in that, he talks about how he would listen to audiobooks while he jogged. And he was jogging past an AIDS clinic in the late 1980s, listening to The Journal of a Plague Year. And he was struck by the juxtaposition of the Black Death and what he was experiencing in 1980 Chicago. With the event of COVID, I thought, if I'm catching the train every day into and out of work wearing a mask, this would be an excellent book to read. And in the process, I'm reading that. And I'm reading him theologically struggling, or devotionally struggling, between the personal responsibility and a desire for self-protection, and what God would have him do in relation to that. And he's working that out in this story. Exceptional. Walden, Life in the Woods. Henry David Thoreau chucks in his job, goes and spends 2 years in the woods building his own cabin, planting beans, and living simply and self-sufficiently. And in his process of that is like, how do I get rid of all the distractions of life to understand where I am and where I fit in relation to my faith more deeply? These are exceptional books for long-form theological thinking. I find them helpful. I like to read books where people have been dead for 100 years who wrote them, because they stand the test of time, rather than going down necessarily to the local Christian bookstore and picking something up that's written 2 years ago, which might not have necessarily stood that test of time. So I find that really valuable. Today, I'm going to share one of these great lay theologians' pieces of work. And I hope you find it valuable and informative, because it fits with what we're talking about today here in Ecclesiastes. There's a joke that goes, there are two types of people in the world, people that put people into two types and people who don't. That's true when we come to Ecclesiastes. I'm going to start where Rowan did last week in chapter 4. We're not even going to engage with chapter 6, because chapter 6, well done Fred reading that, illustrates one of these people that we're going to talk about. So chapter 5 is where the meat is at. But Ecclesiastes chapter 5 lays out two types of people in relation to this entire story for us. We begin there in chapter 4. There's an issue to do with comparison. And I saw all the toil and achievement spring from one person's envy of another. This too is meaningless, chasing after the wind. And then 5:10. Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. And now we head into the two types. Type 1 is the hoarder. That's covered in 13, and then you jump to 15, 16 and 17. I've seen a grievous evil under the sun, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owners. This too is grievous evil. As everyone comes, so they depart. You know, it's saying there's no pockets in a shroud. And what do they gain since they toil for the wind? All their days they eat in darkness with great frustration, affliction and anger. This is a hoarder. Nothing's enough. Eating in darkness, keeping it away from other people so they won't take it off them. And then there's a contrast. And the contrast is the contented. And this is in 5:18 and 19. This is what I've observed to be good. That it is appropriate for a person to eat, to drink, and to find satisfaction in their toilsome labour under the sun during the few days of life God has given them. For this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift of God. They seldom reflect on the days of their life because God keeps them occupied with a gladness of heart. Now, we end up basically doing a superannuation out at this point in time. It's compare the pair. Now, for these two individuals, their net worth could be exactly the same. Their outgoings, exactly the same. Their responsibilities, exactly the same. No difference between the hoarder and the contented. And yet there is the most significant difference. Their attitudes are completely different. Their situations are the same. Their attitudes are different. If you've done industrial relations study at all, or Australian history, or law, at some point in time you will have come across something called the harvester man decision. Now, the interesting thing about the harvester man decision, it is the most successful piece of legislation that failed. It's the most successful piece of legislation that never passed. It got struck down in the High Court. And it goes something like this. The Sunshine Harvester Company wanted the government to place tariffs to stop the import of harvesting machinery. Sounds reasonable. In the process of that, a guy called Justice Higgins, and if you know your Australian history at all well, Higgins is the guy who the electorate is named after, where Costello held for a long period of time. So we're talking significant Australian at this particular point. Wanted to work out, okay, if we were to bring in tariffs, Australian manufacturers need to be paying their workers an appropriate wage. And it was the very first time that anybody began to do research to ask, what is an appropriate wage? What is enough? What does an Australian family need to live on? And they conducted a series of interviews, and they asked questions, and they interviewed, of all people, women, housewives, people that were looking after families, and they were finding out, oh yes, I get to be able to feed my husband, you know, meat twice a week, and blah, 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 all of these types of things. And when you read the legislation, when you read the proposal, there is some of the most beautiful language you will ever come across, and it is wondrous, and this is a little piece from it. I cannot think that an employer and a workman contract on an equal footing or make a fair agreement as to wages, when the workman submits to work for a low wage to avoid starvation or pauperism or something of the like for himself and his family, or that the agreement is reasonable if it does not carry a wage sufficient to ensure the workman, and this is where the poetry comes in, to ensure the workman food, shelter, clothing, frugal comfort, provision for evil days, and as well a reward for special skill of an artisan, if he is one. It's the first time that they were asking the question, what is sufficient? What is it that people need? On appeal, it got struck down in the High Court. It did not survive. But it became the basis of our fair work legislation in Australia. It became the basis of the concept of a minimum wage. So it was unsuccessful, but incredibly important. It asked the question, what is sufficient and what is it that people need? Now, we're going to have a trivia quiz. Like, apparently we did one of these on the weekend at home. All right, so I'm going to ask some questions. What is the currency of Great Britain? This is the interactive part of the sermon. You answer when I ask the question, okay? So that's the warm-up. I'll ask it again. You ready? What's the compass? Andrew, you're not being helpful. Okay, what's the currency of Great Britain? Pound sterling. Yep, okay. What is the currency of Japan? The yen. What is the currency of Europe? And I have a much less trivial question. What is the currency of you? What's your currency? Now, you might go, hey, Nathan, great sermon, love it. You know, excellent, good talking about money and stuff. I actually have a really good relationship with money, so that was really great for those other people to hear. But what I want to tell you is, my friend, you're not off the hook. Because you have a currency. We all have a currency. We all have something that pushes our buttons in a particular way, and I want you to ask the question, what is yours? I mean, it could be money, that concept of freedom and capacity that comes from that. It could be recognition, it could be purpose, it could be value, it could be relationships, it could be intellect, it could be ego, that little voice inside of you that says, don't you know who I am? All of those types of things. Now, I told you I hate preaching. And I hate preaching because I have to think and engage with what it is I'm about to preach. So I tell you my currency. My currency is usefulness, but not possibly like what you're thinking. My concept of currency is to... I've worked in Christian ministry since my 20s. And I'm an engineer. I build ideas and systems, normally educational ones, normally theological ones, normally ones that train and develop people for ministry. And my concept of usefulness is building a machine, building a mechanism, building a process that keeps producing people. I don't want any recognition from it. I don't want anybody to know that I did it. I just want it to keep functioning, 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 functioning. Well, after I've gone, functioning, 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 doing what it's supposed to do. You know what? I don't control that. I don't control that. A mission agency that I worked for recently closed in the last month. It had been going in Australia since 1934. I looked through the operatives that have been, trained in that organisation. Since 1934, I was responsible in my period of time with the system that I was involved and responsible for, 10% of those people since 1934. Now, I'd left that organisation over 20 years ago. And only one other person had been trained since that point in time. My machine was broken. I didn't get the thing I was looking for. But I'm not in control. That's my currency. I want you to ask a question of yourself, what is yours? And all of those things happen. All those things from Ecclesiastes. The comparison, the failing to be satisfied, and then the choice. The hoarder, do I hang on to the little bits of glory, the little bits of the machine that still survive? Oh, yes, I live on in people and the blah, 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 blah. All right. Those are the things we can tell ourselves. That's the eat in darkness stuff. Or are we contented? Do we have a contentment? Do we not count the days of our lives because we have a satisfaction within, because God has done what God has done with us, and that has been a privilege. I mean, that's my currency. Your currency will be different. Your currency won't be the same as mine. It'll be your currency. It'll be your yen. It'll be your pound sterling. It'll be your euro. But you're going to need to ask yourself that question, and then you're going to need to ask yourself, contented or hoarder? Contented or hoarder? This is where I get to share this story. Tolstoy, yay, favourite. Who's heard of this book? It's a short story, which for Russian means standard novel length. You know, War and Peace is huge, this is less. So short story. Who's heard of How Much Land Does a Man Need? Nobody. I had one last time, which is good. But this is a great story. So this man who is poor in Russia realizes that if he had land, he would be wealthy. And he makes a stupid boast. If I had land, if I had wealth, I would not even fear the devil. That's a dumb one, because the devil's listening. And the devil goes, right, game on. And turns up as the mayor of a town. And this town does not overly value their land. And says, come to my land and I will give you as much as your heart desires. The only rules are, I'm here on the top of this hill. Go and mark out, here's a spade, go and mark out your territory as much as you want. You just have to be back here before the sun sets. That's it. Those are the conditions. And he goes and runs and runs. And he sees this lake and he thinks, oh, the fish in this lake. And he marks that out as part of his estates. And he sees this beautiful forest and goes, oh, the lumber and the wealth that would come from that, and runs around that and marks that out for his estate. More. And he's noticing that the sun is starting to go down. It is late in the afternoon. He goes, I've got to get back. I've got to get back. And so he runs and he runs and he runs, and the sweat is pouring off of him. And he is getting closer and closer. And he climbs the hill and the sun has not yet set. And then suddenly he falls down and dies from a heart attack at the feet of the mayor. And then his servant comes out. And his servant digs a hole. And the hole is 2 feet wide. And it is 6 feet long. And it is 6 feet deep. And that is how much land a man needs. That is a fantastic story. And there's a huge impact in that to think about and process. Those are the only two coloured slides in the whole presentation. That's for impact. So that you could have a sense of that particular story. But I ask you, what's your currency? I ask you to think that, because that applies to you. I've got two questions and a challenge. First question, for you and for your currencies, where do you need to stop? Where do you need to count the wins? And where do you need to come in before the sun goes down? Where do you need to stop? This is the second one. And accept Jesus and his work and acknowledge your need for acceptance. Michael, thanks for the song selections. They were excellent. The final one is a challenge to you. Stop. Just stop. Just stop. Smell the roses. Put down the spade that you are using to make the marks. Just stop. But reflection and devotion for you in a moment. I have produced a study for the small groups. If you're not part of a small group, you can probably email Sharon and ask her, and she will send you the study to be able to process and engage with that further if you would like. But the final reflection I want us to finish with is a Tom Waits song. Not all of my theological thinking comes from the great books of the Western world. Sometimes they come from musicians like Tom Waits. Quite gravelly singer, makes Joe Cocker sound like a choir boy. But this track, Come On Up to the House, speaks so beautifully and so well. When we talk about your currency, what do you need to set aside so that you can come into the house? Let me read this. You can close your eyes. You can keep them open. You do what you like. Just reflect as we go through this. These words are for you. Well, the moon is broken and the sky is cracked. Come on up to the house. The only things that you can see is all that you lack. Come on up to the house. All your crying can't do you no good. Come on up to the house. Come down off the cross, because we could use the wood. You've got to come on up to the house. Come on up to the house. Come on up to the house. This world is not my home. I'm just passing through. You've got to come on up to the house. There's no light in the tunnel. There's no irons in the fire. Come on up to the house. And your singing lead soprano in a junk man's choir. Come on up to the house. Does life seem nasty, brutish, short? Come on up to the house. The sea's stormy and you can't find no port? Come on up to the house. You've got to come on up to the house. Come on up to the house. This world's not my home. I'm just passing through. Come on up to the house. You've got to come on up to the house. Come on up to the house. This world's not my home. I'm just passing through. You've got to come on up to the house. There's nothing in the world that you can do. You've got to come on up to the house. And you've been whipped by the forces that are inside of you. You've got to come on up to the house. Well, you are high on your mountain of woe. You've got to come on up to the house. You know you should surrender, but you can't let go. You've got to come on up to the house. You've got to come on up to the house. Got to come on up to the house. This world's not my home. I'm just passing through. You've got to come on up to the house. Got to come on up to the house. Got to come on up to the house. I pray for you this week that you'll have some time to reflect on your currency and where that sits before God and where you are in that choice between being the hoarder or being contented and asking God to give you that contentment. Come on up to the house.